So, you know, there's two ways you validate the behavior of staff: through direct observation and skill building, and through asking a patient, tell us about your experience. In the classic old sense, you know, we learned as a nurse leader, you should round up every inpatient every day.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We're here today with Erin Shipley from Cooper University Healthcare. Erin is the VP of Consumer Experience. For those who don't know, Cooper University Healthcare is an academic health system based in Camden, New Jersey, with 900 physicians and 663 beds. So there's a number of different initiatives we'll be covering today in our conversation, all pertaining to the consumer experience at Cooper University. And the first I'd like to discuss with you, Erin, today, and for our listeners' benefit, is the Cooper Experience Excellent Program. Now, I know that it's focused primarily in your emergency department and your high-volume inpatient units. Tell our listeners a little bit about this program, its genesis, and what you're trying to accomplish through it.
Absolutely, Jordan. So, you know, I think just like a lot of organizations across the country, we have a very high volume emergency department. You know, we were struggling with some of that boarding and the throughput issues that are plaguing many of us and many of our organizations. And it's not just throughput of patients, you know, in the ED to be discharged, but it's also those patients who are waiting for a bed. We wanted to do something different. We are tackling the throughput issues. We are trying to use hallway beds on the ED, on the inpatient unit, so all those things that everybody is doing. But we wanted to create a program that looked at the challenges of care in the emergency department in a much more innovative way. And we really started with our patient and family advisory councils and our patient experience data. We, of course, survey, like pretty much everybody, our patients, and we wanted to look at those. We started with comfort needs, information about their plan of care. And then rather than putting the burden of those action plans on the clinical staff, the experience program is really designed as a way to have other non-clinical team members who can jump in and meet those needs of the patient more real time. So we've got LPNs and EMTs who can serve as that first line of defense for some of that clinical information. They can go right into the chart and they don't have to ask someone. They have access to that information to be able to provide those patients a more proactive update. We have greeters and lobby ambassadors. We know patients, you know, don't want to park in the garage. And so we partner with the greeter to be able to loop in valet so that there's a safer entrance to the emergency department. And already we're beginning to see improvement in their experience results, and we have the sentiment of our team saying that this is good news for them. It's making their jobs easier.
So was this excellence program created in reaction to a poor performance on a HEDIS report? What are kind of the business drivers behind this excellence program? And then how is it attached to the financials at the organization in terms of having dedicated staff and just coordinating resources to implement this program?
Yeah, well, I'll start with the first one. I mean, I think anytime you are surveying patients, you want to kind of look at that data and knock it out of the park. And the core experience results were not where we want to be. Our goal at Cooper is to be what I would call top decile in the nation. And to continue to improve, we want to be a destination of healthcare for our community. We serve a very vulnerable group of patients in our community. That was really the genesis, less about the scores and more about doing what we can to see patients in our ED and make sure we've got that throughput to be able to bed patients on the floor. From an investment perspective, you know, there's definitely a cost benefit to this. You know, when we see more patients through the emergency department, we are improving our scope, and more new patients are going to want to enter our health system when they have a positive experience in the emergency department. It's the front door to your hospital. And so when you have a negative experience in the ED, you may opt out of choosing Cooper for your scheduled surgery procedure that you need to have, or choosing a primary care physician or in your medical practice. Absolutely, there's a people cost to this, but the return on investment is also huge. I don't want to also underestimate the impact of doing the right thing by your team. And when your physicians, your providers, and your staff have a more positive working environment, you're going to see that reduction in turnover. And so your turnover costs and your employee costs are going to go way down. You're going to see a reduction in mortality. So, you know, when you have team members who are engaged, when you have team members who stay, you have better outcomes. And you can't put a price on that, right?
So I love that we delved into a bunch of the kind of drivers of implementing this program and some of the operational mechanics of it. I'd like to, since this is Healthy Data Podcast, dive into the data component of how you facilitate this. So you're looking to free up, increase throughput, put more heads in beds. How is Cooper Health aggregating, normalizing, and integrating data from across different departmental data silos to facilitate the reporting of these KPIs? You're dealing with environmental services and registration, transport, the ED. How are you moving that data into a single dashboard or whatever you're doing to monitor your progress and improve patient experience?
So we have a very robust data analytics team. You know, I believe you spoke to one of my colleagues in a previous podcast. You know, that is the source of truth for all our dashboards. So we really take all of that big data, digest it into a series of dashboards that are important to not just our leaders to be able to make the decisions for their departments, but the frontline staff who need to use that information all the time. So specific to the ED Excellence Program, our team is multiple times a day looking at that throughput dashboard to see, okay, in the last 4 hours, how many patients have we seen through the ED? Yesterday, as we look ahead to the next 4 hours, what can we anticipate and what do we need to do now to make sure that that's a smoother piece? We huddle with our environmental services, our transport team, our excellence ambassadors, and again, have that conversation of, well, what are we seeing in the back end data around, okay, we're at capacity on the floor. What changes do we need to do now to make sure we accommodate that so we don't back up further? So just a couple of examples.
So you're producing these dashboards with your analytics team, but you also have a digital front door through Epic's MyChart, correct?
Yes.
So to what, and I believe that as part of this program, you publish wait times and delays in the ER, and I'm wondering to what extent that information is being integrated and how it's being integrated into Epic's MyChart so that patients can see this data. And then how are you seeing that affect patient decisions? Are they saying, oh, well, you know, are you seeing kind of a flattening of patient volumes? So maybe people are avoiding high volume times, kind of like a happy hour, incentivizing people to come at low volume times. How are you actually technically integrating, and then what's the impact?
Well, I think when we look at the integration of the data, you know, a lot of those metrics are not, it's not information that we're sharing publicly in that my Cooper way. We really try to make sure that our patients are using that as a more two-way communication channel where they're feeling like they're talking to a live caregiver, not getting some kind of AI automated response. Not that that's a bad thing. You know, I think gone are the days where you drive past a billboard that says ER wait time is dot, dot, dot. I don't think consumers really trust that. I know I don't trust that as a consumer. But there is innovation, and it's innovation that we're looking at for on how do you leverage a patient-facing app, whether it's integrated with MyChart or not, that says something about what's next for the patient. Because, you know, it's not necessarily about how long am I waiting, but what's the next step for me? Do I know what my plan of care is? And that's where we can leverage the technology and the people to help fill that gap.
So there's something else that you're doing at Cooper Health, which is kind of related to what's the next step for a patient. So I know you are redefining patient rounding at Cooper Health, kind of experimenting with different frequencies of rounding, anticipating patient requests and documentation. Patients are in the inpatient ward of the hospital are awaiting what's next. Maybe there's another test, maybe there's a discharge. So tell me about this redefining patient rounding. Is Cooper Health shifting away from physicians towards PAs and MPs operating at the top of their licenses for inpatient care? What's going on with patient rounding and how's that affecting consumer experience?
Yeah, I mean, all the rounds, right? And so it's really breaking it up. Let's just start with our frontline staff. And so you used a great term, operating at the top of the license. So when we think about our frontline nurses, our techs, this is about helping them to build their skill, to take advantage of their time that they do have at the bedside. There is great research and data that is continue to update around what we call purposeful rounding, which is it's not necessarily tied to the time. No clinical person is going to want to not have eyes on that patient every hour or so, right? But it is about building their skill that when I'm there at the bedside, that I'm doing what I need to do in clustering my care. I'm toileting patients proactively. For your physicians and providers, absolutely. We look at, we're leveraging nurse practitioners, PAs. We've got that team approach. And we're also an academic medical center. So, you know, we also have learners who are part of that rounding process and helping to make sure that they all have the communication skills to say something. And when we don't have the information while waiting on a test, we want them to say something about it. Hey, we know we're waiting for the test results of your MRI to come back. So, because when you say nothing, patients are anxious, right? They make up a story in their head. It evolves beyond just that frontline patient care piece, but we're also thinking differently about leadership rounding on patients. So, you know, there's two ways you validate the behavior of staff: through direct observation and skill building, and through asking a patient, tell us about your experience. In the classic old sense, you know, we learned as a nurse leader, you should round on every inpatient every day. And on a 72-bed unit with one nurse leader, that nurse leader would be rounding all day long. So we're really dividing and conquering. We have an electronic rounding tool that we're able to see our live census. It integrates with Epic. And so we're able to see who's been rounded on and who hasn't in that 24-hour period. And we have physician leaders who will round on patients. We've got members of our essential services, support services team who will round on patients. But we're all doing it in our own bucket. Like, what's in it for me as the lab leader or the environmental services leader to go in the room and say, hey, you've seen our housekeeper three or four times today. Talk to me a little bit about how well we're cleaning your room. And then they're putting that information in the tool, not as a compliance marker, but more as a commitment to improve our services and care so that we can trend the data.
I'm not sure how long this redefining of patient rounding has been implemented, and it has been an active program at Cooper Health. But do you have any kind of outcome measures on the impact of this, either from patient satisfaction? I mentioned HEDIS earlier from NCQA, or do you have measures on clinical outcomes, or if you have any risk-based sharing models like an ACO or shared savings, if you have, you know, capitated patients that you're able to save on? What has been the, so I'll leave it there.
The outcomes. You know, what we know is that when patients have been rounded on, and we see this in our own data, so when patients say, yes, I saw a leader during my stay, they will rate their experience of care on HCAHPS, which, you know, for those of you who don't know, the patient experience required survey from CMS. The Cooper data, they say, yes, they rate their experience of care in the 90th percentile or above in the nation. And that's all hospitals who take the survey. When they say no, it's much lower, below the 25th. We also see, and when we think about innovation and data, those patients are less likely to be readmitted because we tie that data, that rounding data, to readmissions. And if that patient was rounded on during their stay and they're readmitted, our experience team goes back and reviews the rounding notes because that last leadership round is really a discharge planning round. Right. So if we've not done that well, of course, that could contribute to the readmission. So we've seen the reduction of readmission through the rounding piece. Also, the post-visit call process, which is like a round, right? We call patients after discharge, make sure that they're safe and well. Of course, we ask about their experience, too. But we've seen almost a 4% reduction of readmissions just over the last 2 or 3 years through the implementation and the consistency of this.
Wow, that's an incredible figure. 4% reduction of readmissions through this rounding reform, which definitely has an impact on the hospital's bottom line and the health system's bottom line. And when you're operating on a 1 or 2% margin, that's significant. I do want to pivot to the third topic and final topic we'll be covering today, which is actually somewhat unique and is quite interesting. It pertains to the care of patients with a very complex set of chronic conditions, particularly innovations concerning the care of patients with intellectual and developmental disabilities. I've done episodes before on hospital at home. I'd like to hear in particular, what's going on with your care of this particular patient population? How are you managing their care? What are you doing to innovate here?
They're what we call in the experience world a silent population, because often there's not they can't speak for themselves. There's not an advocate or guardian who's available to speak for them. So we've created through Epic what is called our disability support program. We have an Epic registry where we're able to, as we submit patients to the program that have one of those complex disability needs, we will, they're basically flagged. We get a daily email from Epic, our disabilities team, that not just shows the next 7 days of appointments for those patients, but the next 90 days of procedures that are out and above. And our care coordination team calls those patients ahead of time when they hit the registry in our support program. We begin to understand what are those special needs that are accommodations that those patients would benefit from. Things like a private waiting room, sensory resources, fidget tools. Can we coordinate some of their visits? Early in the program, we had a patient who every day of the week had an office visit in the same building, right? And so those are all visits that we could consolidate together. And for a critical population like this, you know, this is a chance for us, if we're going to sedate that patient for a procedure, we should also do the dental cleaning. We should do their OBGYN visit. We should clip their toenails. And so all kinds of things that would cause stressor and an eventual harm for the patient and their wellness, we're trying to coordinate that all together. You mentioned hospital at home. We're launching our mobile program where we know it's hard to get those patients into the office. There's a potential for violence, but you know, behavior that we don't want to see from patients, and they're well-meaning, right? But that when we can go into the patient's primary residence or group home to do that care rather than having them come into the office, we not only create capacity in our offices because those visits tend to take longer, but we're creating wellness for the patients in our care.
Erin, you mentioned something interesting. I think you mentioned that the care teams you have dedicated care teams for this particular population and are looking to anticipate certain sorts of visits by this population. Do you have any leading indicators that Cooper is leveraging in order to anticipate those care visits?
Well, you know, we start with our registry, right? And so when we look at, so we've got over 1,600 patients who have diagnosis codes that are linked to the support program. So we certainly track the intake of new patients into our support program. We're also tracking The contact rate as we are reaching out pre-office visit, pre-procedure, and afterwards, because we want to make sure that we're getting to the right person to help support that patient. Oftentimes, one of the biggest reasons for cancellations for procedures is that we don't have the guardian signature and paperwork that we need. And so we're really looking at reduction of no-shows with the office visits. We're looking at office wait time. And so as we begin to improve and anticipate those experiences, we're seeing wait times go down in those offices. And we're also beginning to look at a decrease in emergency department and urgent care usage. As we launch our mobile program, our patients and guardians are already telling us that they're wanting to use that for virtual urgent care. How do we leverage telehealth in the future that they avoid coming in the first place?
I appreciate that explanation. You mentioned virtual urgent care, and back to the topic of data. We're approaching the end of the podcast episode, but I just want to wrap up this topic. How would you've mentioned the Epic registry a few times. You have a dedicated registry for this population. How is that registry handling identity management and data deduplication while managing these complex care plans that involve things that aren't typically the responsibility of the hospital, like doing OBGYN and dental and nail clipping for an inpatient for a mental health stay for this population? So how are you kind of ensuring that the right information, the right data is technically available to the care providers at the point of care?
This is the beauty of the care coordination note. You know, we don't require our clinicians to go in and look at it. They want to go in and look at it because it helps them to better deliver their care. When we complete the care coordination note the first time, all we have to do is update it. And so it's not really, our team doesn't see it as duplication because it's part of the record, it's secure. And you know, when we're trying to communicate with the individual patient, we try to do that through MyChart if we can, or through obviously secure ways to communicate with that. But it's an exciting program. Our teams are very excited about it.
So I'd like to give you a final opportunity to speak to the listeners of this podcast right now. Perhaps somebody's listening who says, you know, I think it may be really interesting to do an excellence program where we're trying to improve patient satisfaction and reduce ER wait times. Maybe we should change patient rounding. I think that was an interesting part of the conversation. Looks like there's a reduction in readmissions, and that could improve our DSH payment or our payments from Medicare for risk sharing agreements. Or maybe, you know, I'm interested. I also have a particular population. We work with registries like to manage that. What's something that you would say to them? Maybe there's some challenge that you were able to overcome or some advice that you wish someone had given you when you started any of these three journeys. What would you say to someone listening?
I would say go back to your goals. Go back to your goals. We in the past in the experience world have been real big about setting targets against the survey metric. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, look at more of those process measures. What are your key performance indicators that speak to something that is within people's control that we know we can measure and it's governed, and tie your goal to that. It's going to have a downstream impact on the patient experience results. Something like, did I have the opportunity to participate in bedside shift report? Yes or no? Set a goal against that, because when we know when patients are informed, they're going to rate their experience of care better, they're going to be less likely to be readmitted, they're going to know and trust what to do next. So goal planning is a big thing, and that's certainly innovation as well.
Well, thank you very much for our listeners. This has been Aaron Shipley of Cooper University Healthcare, the Vice President of Consumer Experience. Aaron, I'd like to thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Jordan. Have a good one.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.